You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. I have a long-standing habit of reading obituaries in the paper. Maybe it's the history major in me, reading about what somebody's accomplished, the family, the education, the career, whether he or she served in the military, thinking about the history that happened in that departed person's lifetime. Just what are we looking for in an obituary? And in this era of the selfie, are people deciding to write their own? With us now is Thomas Lynch, the longtime director of Lynch & Sons Funeral Home in Milford, and an internationally acclaimed poet and essayist. It is such a pleasure to have you with us on Stateside,
Thomas. Nice to be here, Cynthia.
You call obituaries one of the honorable duties of the living to the dead, which I thought was a lovely turn of phrase. How so?
I think of funerals as sort of, good funerals are ones that by getting the dead where they need to go, the living get where they need to be. And so there's this traffic that in the disposition of our dead, the actual shoulder and shovel work of it, the living get to act out those things that are impossible to put into words. Now, part of that, on the same continuum, is this notion of a life review, a record kept of what it is that just happened. So an obituary, a good obituary, ought to first alert people to the fact that someone who has been is no longer. Someone has ceased to be in the way that is remarkable and shocking and breathtaking. So the first thing is to notice the death. It's a death notice. And the second thing is to review how it was this person came to be the one they are, separate from the rest of us. Because whereas the numbers on mortality are convincing, you know, hovering around 100%.
Yes, they are.
Every one of us is the same but different. You're married to an Irishman, so you know this Irishism that catches on to the fact that we are one of a kind and one of a kind.
But it is interesting. You read obituaries, and I do, and sometimes you see ones that are literally as long as the length of the paper, mm-hmm. and others are basically two lines that so-and-so passed away, memorial service to be held at a later date, or no memorial service. And mm-hmm. I do find myself wondering what is behind that and maybe the kinds of family dramas. And I'm sure over your years as an undertaker, you have certainly had to referee family tensions in all of this.
Yeah. I think sometimes less is more when it comes to good writing, and good editing oftentimes sharpens our sense of it. So where it's true that word count matters, it's also nice if you can have the kind of life that can be accounted for in such a way that it connects you with the rest of the species. I was reading yesterday in the Guardian William Trevor's obituary, and I've read some of his stories, and I was aware of his presence since the time I started reading short stories. But here, this man lived to be 88 years old. He wrote novels and stories, and some of the movies we've seen are based on narratives of his. And yet, reading this obituary, I was able to see how his life and times sort of seeded his narratives, his fictions. And that, to me, was an add-on. There are so many obituaries that I read, like you, and I think, I've been aware of this person, but I didn't know this person. And an obituary should gather together the highlights, the things that were done that no one else could do. I think another thing about William Trevor's obituary is it's very nice. The subject of the obituary, William Trevor, outlived his obituarist, Peter Porter, another man of letters from the UK who died in 2010. But it gives up the truth about so many obituaries is that they're pre-written.
They're pre-written.
Yeah.
And in this selfie era, are we seeing people, are you encountering people that say, you know what, I want to write my own and leave it for the kids to post once I'm gone?
I remember when I had a chance to read Evan Chambers, a composer associated with the university here, wrote an orchestral suite, and he asked some of his poet friends to write poems that became part of the performance of that. One of the performances took place in Carnegie Hall, and I remember saying to Keith Taylor, a dear friend of mine, and I know well known to you and to your listeners,
yes,
that this is obituary class. You only have to read a poem in Carnegie Hall once, and it goes into that file we keep quietly to ourselves that says, among other things, he read his poetry in Carnegie Hall.
So at least talk with the family, perhaps. Is it worthwhile having conversations with the family, you know?
Of course it is. It is how we get to know the dead that we don't know. Now, I work in what is still considered a small town, and so it falls to me sometimes to write obituaries for people that I've known a long time. And there's a catharsis to that, I must say, to be able to find the sentence and subtract it from the word hoard that really does catch the person. My father-in-law, may his memory be eternal, who died recently, used to say to me at Thanksgivings and Christmases when he'd be sitting in my Barca lounger, "You're going to have to write my life story." And we both knew, with the wink and nod that passes between men of a certain age, that he meant that I'd have to write his obituary if things worked out the way they should and I outlived him. But I remember about him the fact that he always saw in the castaway, in the reject, in the secondhand, in the junk, in the refuse at the curb, something salvageable and worthwhile. And I was able to get that. That became his life story, because so much of his life was making good out of the thrown away.
What's the process at a typical funeral home, certainly at yours, at Lynch in Milford? What do you do when a family comes in and they haven't had any idea of that? How do you lead them through the process?
My father used to say to me, Cynthia, and he'd say, "Be sure and ask a question that can't be answered with yes or no." So ask them, you know, was Tom sick a long time, or was this very sudden? And usually the family has already begun their own story of this life and death. It's immediate, because oftentimes they've been sitting at bedside in intensive care for the past 10 days, or they've been at the hospice, or in the bedroom at home where hospice makes their call, or they've been their own caregivers. But whatever the case, they've had a lot of time to think about how they came to be here next to someone who is slowly sometimes, rapidly other times, ceasing to be, and what the meaning of that is. I really do think that has separated our species from all the other things that live and die, because we're the ones who look into the maw of that ceasing to be and say things like, "Is that all there is? Can this happen to me? Am I all alone? What comes next? Why is it cold?" These are questions that rock bass and rhododendrons never ask, but humans do.
The story of how we came to be really is a daily installment, isn't it?
Sure is.
Well, we are very happy to have had you with us, poet and undertaker Thomas Lynch. Of course, his collection of essays, The Undertaking, Life Stories from the Dismal Trade, won the American Book Award and was a finalist for the National Book Award. And his second essay collection, Bodies in Motion and at Rest, won the Great Lakes Book Award. Anything coming up?
I've been bedeviled by a long fiction, which has taken 7 years. Maybe the death of me, but if I get it done, I'll be glad for it.
Thomas, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.